We put in a lot of time, a lot of work. We're seeing one of the films I'm working on right now for two roles. I saw, and it's a low budget feature, like everyone's making scale plus 10. It has to be New York hire. I saw 200 actors for two roles.
Hello, it is March 6, 2024. My name is Daniel Berrios, and I'd like to welcome you back to another episode of The Movies. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences announced that in 2026, celebrating the movies of 2025, the Oscars will add a brand new category to the competition called Best Casting. And this award would go to the casting director of such acclaimed films. And if you're anything like me, you might have been asking the question, how do you even judge that? Is it who puts all the best movie stars in one picture? You know, is it the person who was able to find the dude from under a rock to make the best actor of the year? How does this stuff work? What even does a casting director do? I hope this episode will answer most of your questions. I was fortunate enough to bring on to the show Kate Geller. She is an Artios Award-winning casting director for films like Shiva Baby and Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. Her resume has nearly 100 projects in it, including John Wick 1 and 2, The Wolverine, The Maze Runner, and most relevantly to this podcast, the film that I covered a couple weeks ago, Molly and Max in the Future. And this is how I was introduced to Kate. This is a fun episode. I got to learn so much, and I'm hoping that you will be able to learn as much as I did and enjoy the insanely busy, work-laden, but ultimately fun world of being the person who discovers actors and who brings them on board projects and matches them with directors to make some of your favorite movies come to life. So without any further ado, this is my interview with Kate Geller. I wanted to bring you on specifically because of the announcement of the Best Casting category to the Academy Awards coming out in the 2026 year, I think for 2025 films. For me, it was the first question of like, why casting? Like, what do you think would it's such a, I don't know, it's something that I think people don't really think about.
They don't, but it's kind of wild to me that it hasn't been included before. We are the first people hired on a film after a producer or director, and we are with the film from the get-go and help put the film together. And we're the only above the line credit that has not had an Oscar.
Wow.
So I mean, you think about it. Your SAG Awards give Best Ensemble.
Right.
Golden Globes give best cast or best film or whatever. Who is an integral part of that but the casting director, in my opinion? I mean, we are part of that initial team that helps put the puzzle pieces together to make the movie what it is. You know, it's our ideas that like breakout performance, all of those things. Who's finding these actors? It's the casting director, 90% of the time, right?
So whenever you get started on a project, like can you walk me through the process? We got in contact because I was able, really fortunate to see Molly and Max in the Future. Loved that film.
Thank
And
you.
I was like, all right, let's see, because that's a movie that lives and dies with the two leads, Zsozsa Mamet, Aristotle Atari. If you don't get those people right, and everybody will say that kind of colloquially, like, oh yeah, you know, you watch a movie like When Harry Met Sally, you watch a movie like You've Got Mail, you know, those ca that ca romantic chemistry is so important, but finding it, that's the secret sauce, so to speak. How do you do that?
I mean, you don't necessarily know. And you just hope for it, but I mean, that's not entirely true. On a budget, on a smaller budget like Molly and Max in the Future, we're not really doing chemistry reads, you know, we're making offers to people. Nobody's really for those lead roles. We're not going to audition them. For a studio film, like When Harry Met Sally, you're going to attach the lead who's, so say you have Billy Crystal and then maybe Meg Ryan wasn't discovered yet, let's say, right?
Okay.
And then you're going to have a chemistry read with the two of them to make sure that that works. You put them together and you see that they work off of each other, that their energies work well. Mm-hmm. And you can tell in the room, you know? For something like Molly and Max, we had Zasha attached first for a while. And then we got Ari attached and Michael just started meeting with them so that they were able to get to know each other a little bit and build that chemistry together.
When you're fleshing out a movie like that, how then is the process different for somebody like grabbing the leads first off to somebody like Mateo Lane? Mateo Lane's one of my favorite new dudes on TikTok, and seeing him in this movie was amazing. Like when you're bringing in the, like Max's girlfriend who's doing this sort of like fast talking, like 40s actress type of vibe, what's the process like for sort of fleshing out the cast around them?
For Max's two girlfriends, for Mar 14 and Cassie, we had auditions for those. Just because those were like such specific types of material, you needed to make sure that the actors would fit in the world. Then for somebody like for the game show scenes with Mateo Lane, Michael Chernus, and Aparna Nancharla, we just made offers to them. Like, we know those humans have enough of a body of work to play straightforward people. Okay. or to make those choices that make them so fun and weird and crazy that we knew that they would bring life to those roles. For Mar 14 and Cassie, it was those actors also had a body of work, but again, because they were so specific, especially for the role Aaron Dark played, Mar 14/Maria, just to play that kind of like over the top character, you really needed to make sure that, you know, her vocal cadence and the actions that she imbued into the role are so specific. You just needed to make sure that the actor could handle it. I knew she would, but sometimes you just got to see it, you know?
So in that case, is it kind of combing through like a self-tape and seeing their instinct? Did you all give them that direction initially, or is that like, oh, let's read the scene and see what you're pulling out of it?
No, it was like a very specific... There was very specific character descriptions in the script, which Michael put together. I actually didn't do too many self-tapes for that role just because my job is to know actors. So there were some that I wasn't quite sure would be able to do it, but others I was like, Michael, we're just going to bring them in for a director session. I think they'll be great. Let's see how it goes. And if they had wanted to, I'd work with them ahead of time. But on a normal basis, my job is to release a character description and comb through and select actors to self-tape for me, comb through the self-tapes, make my selects, or have them audition for me, give them direction, still make my selects, and then send those to the director. Then we decide who's going to come back in to just meet, to read with him so he can direct them and make sure that they're speaking the same language so that when they get to set, they know what they're, you know, they know that it's going to be an easy process. And then, does that kind of answer your question?
No, it does. Yeah, but before you get to Michael, how many like versions of like a similar type of thing are you seeing? Like how big do these like groups of people that you have in mind go?
I mean, I don't know. I know thousands of actors. Like I can't, it's,
how do you keep that organized? Like in your
head? In my brain?
Yeah. Like I would go crazy.
What's odd about me is that I'm not great with names, but I'm really good with faces, and I'll remember where I've seen, like, what movies I've seen someone in, or if I saw a movie with another actor whose name I, like, really, really know well, so I can play connect the dots. You know what I mean? Like, when IMDb goes out, I'm in trouble. But I also, like, I have lists. I've been, you know, I've been doing this for 15 years, and I have so many, like, lists of actors, like actors I've seen in film or theater or TV, and lists I've made for different projects. And then when you're talking about, like, the co-stars or, like, the day players, it's just my, accumulation of knowledge. It's just, you know.
Do you ever have lists of, like, this person I think would be great, like, for a tough guy role, or this person would be great for, like, the person who's going to backstab somebody? Like, how extensive do these lists get?
I never think of it like that, per se, because, I mean, actors want to act. So I think that there's more subtlety to what is in a character than just a tough guy or just a backstabber. Like, what is the motivation and what depth are they going to bring to the role? So I certainly have, like, character lists, like character actors. I have leading man or people that I think could play leading man, even if they haven't been given the opportunity, because they'd be considered the sidekick or whatever. I'm always interested in casting against type. I find that to be more interesting. Like the casting in Fargo or...
Yeah.
God, what else was I watching? The casting in True Detective. Like, these things are all... The casting directors are so brilliant on those shows because they're taking actors that you know... in a specific way and giving them an opportunity to play something totally different. Like, I think it would be really fun to see Willem Dafoe play, like, I guess similarly, he's a tragihero in Poor Things, you know, but right. Have him play, like, the hero of a film. That would be super fun for me. Or
the fact that Mark Ruffalo is in Poor Things in general. Like, that's one of the best parts about that movie.
I think the casting in that movie, that's one of my favorite films this year. I think they really did a fantastic job. They made some really interesting choices, and it's just such an interesting, weird, smart, cool film that takes you a minute to be like, what is going on? And then you're like, this is so fun.
It's one of those movies that I think is kind of like a wind-up toy. You just give it, like, a good idea and just, and then what, and then what, and then what. I think I just talked about it yesterday. If you were to give the award to best casting this year, would that be your vote of the movies you've seen?
I'm this is me thinking about it. I think that the casting for Killers of the Flower Moon was probably more difficult outside of Leo and Robert De Niro. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate the work that she did on it. You're digging deep to go for that film, and I really appreciate that. I think the casting choices in Poor Things were phenomenal. I loved all the fun, amazing people that are in Barbie. And Oppenheimer also has, like, I'm in my brain, like, trying to think of all the different best features right now.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer also had, like, just such brilliant casting. I mean, they're really, I would find it, I think it would be somewhere between Poor Things and Killers of the Flower Moon, just because I think I really appreciate, like, the work that went into Killers of the Flower Moon. And Poor Things is just, I just love that movie. That was my favorite film this year.
When someone's auditioning, like, what specifically are you looking for? Is it kind of like a feeling? Is it like I have an idea what this character is and let's see how close they get to it?
like I said, we're the first people hired. We're hired before anyone else. And we have lots of conversations with the directors and the producers to get an idea of what they're looking for. And you know, part of the process is like making sure that the director and I speak the same language and have the same vision, obviously, for the roles. So what I'm looking for is the person that I think will bring this story to life in the best way. While we have an idea of what the character is, the actor's job is to make that character a person, right?
Right.
Who's got thoughts and feelings and has had a day before, they woke up a certain way, how was their cat to them in the morning? You know, all of those things make an actor's performance what it is. Seeing what somebody's bringing to the role and making it their own in that specific kind of way is what is intriguing to me. So while an initial audition might not quite have the tone of what the film is or what I know the scene needs to be in that initial audition, if they've brought something to it that makes it feel like they at least understand who the human is by playing this character, that's the opportunity to give them the direction to get them to where they need to be. You know, if you just play what's on the page, it's not interesting. I don't want to watch that. I want to watch somebody that's going to make this feel like you or I having a conversation, right?
Yeah. If we're going to be, let's say, judging best casting, I was reading on, forgive me if I'm saying this wrong, the Artios Awards website. Okay, so Artios website. On the Artios website, it was something like originality, creativity, and contribution to overall quality. How then, as a casting director, are you, like, as someone who's won this award multiple times, congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
how do you think, then, someone who's voting on that cast would judge those three criteria?
I mean, kind of like what I was just saying to you. So, like, finding those people that make the humans you're watching feel like real people, like you're watching real humans. You're not watching actors. That's when you watch a show and you get you watch a film and you're getting absorbed into the performance. Mm-hmm. You're getting absorbed into the story. That's the actors sucking you in, right? You know, when somebody feels off, you know, when you like pop out and you're like, oh, what just happened? And maybe subconsciously you're not aware of it, but it's usually because the casting might not have been ideal for that one moment, even if everything else is perfect. I don't know how to explain.
Ideal for that one moment, like it just, the people on screen at that moment just didn't quite.
They just didn't quite click, or the person that was cast in the role just didn't quite get what the tone of everything was, but there was like a, you know, there are so many factors that go into casting as well, which is helping get money for the film,
right?
Making sure people will see it. So a lot of it has to do with like things I don't particularly love, because I want it to be somebody like, I want to watch an actor, but like a social media following, or, you know, how are they going to help this movie get eyes, you know?
So like being a producer on Molly and Max, how did that influence your approach to this, as opposed to maybe other projects where you didn't have that much involvement?
Or maybe, well, that see, that's kinda, the thing, is that a lot of what a casting director does on the front side of a film, mm-hmm. like when it's getting started, is producing in a way. We're not necessarily going out to the financiers, but if the film doesn't have money, if the film is unfinanced to start, and we need to get cast attached in order to get the financing moving, which is 90% of independent films. It's very rare that you get a financed independent right. film off the get-go, you know? Mm-hmm. We're strategizing on the best people to go to fill the lead roles in order to get the money. So while for me, the producing aspect has come more on the after the film got made. That's where I've I've been learning the most. Because I think on the front end is where I know how to finagle that, talking, pitching the project to the agents and the actors in a way that like helps get them interested and want to work with the director and want their clients to work with the film, because it's going to do the festival circuit. I mean, Molly and Max in the Future had a wonderful festival run.
Right.
And it won a bunch of awards, which was fantastic. And it's, you know, we're certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, which is very exciting. But getting the people to read, it's just like pitching it to a financier or pitching to a production company. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have to pitch the project.
So you're like the forager. You're like exploring out, trying to grab things. What happens whenever you're like, how often do logistics, like scheduling conflicts, and like how often does that get in the way of like, man, I really love this actor and I want them to be a part of this, but like, maybe money's not there, or maybe like they're busy doing something else, or like putting all that together. How often does that come and kind of throw a monkey wrench at things?
All the time. But that's something, it's if the money's not there and we're really interested in the actor, and the actor has responded to the film, but they're not available for the original time frame, we will likely push our schedules to accommodate them. The main thing is working around our lead actors. The lead actors are the ones that are going to get the movie made. Everybody else, like, we try. And if there's, like, for instance, Okereke Onadawan, who is in Molly and Max in the Future, had been shooting a pilot. So he wasn't available for the front end. So we had to make sure to, like, schedule him towards the back of our shoot so that we could get him in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what was fun about Molly and Max is that we had all these great people come in to fill out the cast, and they only had to work like a day or two. So it was just much easier to like schedule around that and figure it out.
Interesting. So you mentioned like social media followings earlier. How has, since you started, how has like the boom of like new social media, or like how has 10 plus years changed the casting business now? Like the fact that I'm talking about Mateo Lane, because I've seen him on TikTok and his comedy clips are hilarious to me. And now he's in this movie. You know, is that like basically how's the industry evolved in that way?
So I know Mateo Lane from doing stand-up because I've seen his stand-up. I go to a ton of comedy shows. I'm going to one tonight. I went to one on Thursday. This is how I get to find these actors that we put in movies. I'm an old lady. I'm not on the TikTok. It 100%, as I'm starting to work, like, you know, I work with a lot of first-time feature directors. And as a lot of the younger generation is coming up, it's more important to them. And I haven't figured out why. But that's fine. It's not, you know, that's how it goes. Because I don't necessarily know that it's been proven that because you have a big following, you're getting more views on your films. You know what I mean? But yeah. What do I know? I am not a marketing person. The way it's changed for me is that a lot of the time, what is their social media following, and will that, because that can help us get money. I'm like, can they act? That's all I care about, is if I can put them on camera and they're going to make this feel like a real person. What's great about Mateo in Molly and Max in the Future is that even though it's like such a caricature, it still feels like a real person. It feels like somebody you're watching on a reality show. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's good to see that set of stuff. I don't know. It feels like really refreshing. I was... to just kind of have it like be like a plain bones, like, look, if you're good for the role, you're good for the role.
That's how I want it to be.
Right.
If that's actually the situation, is not always the case. A lot of times they're like, well, this actor has, you know, 150,000. This one only has 80. So let's go with the 150,000 one, even though the one with 80 might be better. That is not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sometimes.
How often do you gotta kill your darlings?
Often.
Oh.
But I guess it's also, look, I'm an independent film. Mm-hmm. I work primarily in independent film. So it's already an uphill battle because you've got to sell it. You've got to get distribution. You've got to get the festival run. And while I'm very lucky that a lot of the films I work on do the festival run and do a lot of the good festivals, you still got to sell the film. You know, you got to get those investors their money back.
How many projects are you keeping in your head at once? Like on it, because I looked at the IMDb. There's like 15 upcoming, and I'm like,
some of those have not been active in years. Right now, I'm currently working on 4 films that are active and going within the next 2 months. I also have an additional, I don't even know how many, like 6 to 10 that are all in various stages of development. But that's the nature of independent film. Just like anybody else, in order to make a living, because this is a job, I have to work on multiple projects at a time because none of them have huge budgets and are able to like pay me on a weekly basis per se. You know,
how do you keep that like work-life balance going? Because I feel like I would go crazy trying to manage it all.
I have started to set more boundaries.
Keyword started.
Which has been really difficult because it's, you know, I live in New York. I'm from New York. I'm in a business that deals 70% with Los Angeles. And so we're on their time zone. So I am often fielding calls at 10 p.m. my time.
Oh, God.
I'm at the point where I have started, if it is after 9 o'clock my time, I will not answer the phone unless it's something that's like very active and like I have to talk to them. Mm-hmm. I attempt to not work on the weekends, but that's, you know, sometimes it's just like right now I was saying I'm working on 4 active projects. Saturdays are when I can get so many things done and I don't have to deal with phone calls. I don't have to answer emails. It's just I can focus on what I need to focus on to get things done. Plus, like half of the things that I enjoy doing are going to the theater, film, and comedy shows. And thus, my brain is always working. Like it's hard to, you know, I'm like, who is this actor? And then I write them down. And then I look up their IMDb. And then I'm taking notes. Like it's so hard.
Does that ever like get in the way of enjoying a film?
100%.
Like, as it is? Do you find yourself having to like rewatch it to like really like just let yourself go in essence?
No. I find it easier to do with theater sometimes. In the movie theater, like not if I'm watching a film at home. If I'm in a movie theater, I have to focus because I'm not going to take my phone out in the middle of a movie theater.
Right, of course.
And I'm not going to take one out in a play, you know?
Yeah, of course.
And I have this discussion with a lot of my casting director friends because I really don't watch any reality television. It's not my vibe.
Okay.
Occasionally I'll watch like RuPaul's Drag Race or I'll watch like a cooking show, but that's kind of it. I watch a lot of game shows to unwind because most of my casting director friends watch reality shows and they were like, the reason being it's the only time we don't have to work.
Wow. Okay.
Because you can watch it and you can just like.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Zone out. Like just watch the idiocy or the fun of it and like not have to worry about it. You know what I mean?
What's your favorite game show?
I mean, Jeopardy.
Jeopardy's brilliant.
Because it makes my brain work. and I gotta say, I really love Family Feud.
I love Family Feud.
And then there's also, I watch a lot of Game Show Network. Mm-hmm. There's also a show with John Michael Higgins that I can't remember the name of right now that I really like. America Says, that's what it's called. But it's just like guessing games.
Do you ever find yourself like on a game show, you're like, wow, that guy would be like really cool in like such and such. Do you ever get like, I wonder if I could just like randomly pluck this random like guy who's in the show. Still?
I mean, very rarely, because most of the time I'm just like, you know, totally checked out.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, I'm like, wow, that's a character, and they'd be entertaining.
What is, like, the most common trait that, like, when you're watching, like, an audition that just, like, irks you the wrong way? Like, what is something that people are doing in auditions that is just like, nah, we can't, like, immediately turns you off?
Especially considering a lot of auditions right now are self-tapes. Mm-hmm. Not actually taking the time to understand what you're saying and why you're saying it, or putting, you know, if I'm sending you the script, at least look through enough of it to, like, get a gist of what the story is. What the tone of the film is. Mm-hmm. Read the character description. Understand what scene, what you're doing. Like, I had somebody come in for an audition for me the other day that took, I had limited times that I could see people. He took a spot away from another actor and was totally unprepared. Mm. They had a week to have worked on it, you know, over 4 days. It was only a couple of pages of dialogue, and they didn't prepare. They didn't take the time to understand what the scene was about. And that is your job as an actor. And that's how you get cast. You have to know what your place in the film is to make it come to life. So, yeah.
So everybody, make Kate's job easier. Do the work. Just do the work. It's not that hard.
This is not a business for the faint of heart on any of it. We're all freelancers. We're all working to get to the next job. There's a lot of competition. So do what you can to succeed. It's up to you.
All right. I'm going to close it off on that. Do the work. All right. Thank you, Kate, so much. It's been fun having you on. It's been enlightening, learning a little bit more about this industry. And hopefully for those listening to who have maybe never even thought about this before, maybe an announcement or even clicking on this episode might be the first time they've thought about casting in general. So I have to thank you so much for making the time on a Saturday, folks, on a Saturday to help talk to me and my little podcast. So I'm grateful. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thanks so much, Daniel. Have a great one.
All right. See you.
Bye.
And that's it. Thank you so much again to Kate for coming on the show and imparting so much knowledge and so much fun onto my little podcast. I'm hopefully that was as enjoyable and educational for y'all listening as well. I have all of Kate's information linked in the description in case you want to go follow her. If you want to follow me, you can in the podcast, you can do so on Twitter @themovies_pod. As far as a song that I'm going to close out, I was talking to a friend, Carolyn Thompson, who is part of the How Have You Not Seen This podcast, and somehow we were talking on Twitter, and she introduced me to Jeff Rosenstock. And this is a song called Rainbow off of his album Worry, which I can only describe as like what happens when the Green Day, American Idiot, and Say Anything kids grow up and have to deal with existential crises. A true punk rock opera. Thank you so much, friends, for listening to another episode of The Movies. And like I say every single time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and take care of the movies.